Hello, everyone. Welcome to the iPhone podcast. This is the 2011 year in review. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng, alongside Justin Louis. Justin, how are you doing? Once again, it's been a while.
Yep. It's been a kind of crazy, extraordinary year for Apple, and on the good and bad side of things. So let's get to it. So it's not a 3-hour episode trying to cover all this stuff.
All right. Basically, we're just going to roll over some of the top stories of the year. We're going to start off with January 2011, which seems like an eternity ago. This one, the rumor that finally came true, it was the Verizon CDMA iPhone 4. Basically, on January 11th, Apple and Verizon, they finally announced that they were coming out with a new iPhone 4, this one on the CDMA network. Tim Cook joined Verizon's Lowell Macadam on stage for the announcement.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that big a deal now. Looking at it a year later, the iPhone seems to be on almost every carrier now. But going back, if you remember at the time, we joked about it. It took a story away from us here on the podcast because up until that point, a month did not go by for the last 3 years previous where there wasn't some type of new Verizon rumor. So it finally came true. And now it just seems like second hat that the iPhone's pretty much everywhere now.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that the CDMA iPhone 4 antenna is currently the one that's on the existing iPhone 4S right now, where the antenna points have been changed as opposed to the original GSM iPhone 4. That's what we see now on the iPhone 4S.
Yeah, it was one of those things when AntennaGate first broke. Apple kind of claimed there was nothing wrong with it, and it kind of turns out now it was an overblown story, but obviously there was a little something wrong with it because it has been tweaked now for the 4S, and you just really don't hear anything about the antenna now. So,
moving on here, next story, Steve Jobs takes a medical leave of absence to focus on his health. This was on the 17th of January. Basically, there was a media advisory that was sent out, an email that was sent to the employees from Steve, basically saying that he was going to ask the board of directors to grant him a medical leave so he could focus on his health. Tim Cook, once again, would be stepping in for him like he did back in 2009.
Yeah, and when you look back at that now, you just see Steve on his first medical leave. You thought it was one thing, and then it was more serious than people thought. He had the liver transplant. But the one theme that you see every time was people were always shocked. Even though the world knew that this man was suffering with a serious illness, it always became shocking because you just sort of, Apple and Steve go hand in hand. He came back every time previously. So every time one of these things came up, it was always shocking.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was something, like you said, we didn't want to really talk about, but, you know, Steve stays true to his word that if, you know, he's not able to fulfill his duties, you know, he would move on. And, you know, for those people who have been reading the Steve Jobs biography, you certainly get a further in-depth look about how he dealt with his illness, how he dealt with, you know, cancer and the reality of it. Really, really interesting now that we're looking back and hearing about his medical leave. Moving on here, a few days after that announcement, Apple announced that they had finally reached their 10 billionth app had been downloaded from the iTunes App Store. So a pretty significant 10 billion app downloads.
Yeah, you said finally, and I know you didn't even really mean it that way. You just quickly said that word, but it's actually amazing that they could download 10 billion apps in such a short period of time, especially when you look at kind of the state of apps before Apple really became. The software industry wasn't anything like it is now, and now everybody's talking apps. Everybody wants to have their own app store. Every platform is fighting for developers, but it's just one more thing that Apple kind of created this market, and now everybody's scrambling to catch up.
Yeah, and it was only just a couple days ago that Google reported the Android market had passed the 10 billion apps downloaded. So, I mean, I can see how that could happen with so many more Android devices out there, as opposed to Apple having just, you know, a couple models of few models actually of the iPhone.
Yeah, and the new year, we'll probably talk about that a lot. I think, as usual, there's some kind of weird reporting going on when you compare iOS and Google. Google will trump these certain metrics that make them look like they're stronger in the market, but every time when you look at profit or you look at paid app downloads or you look at browser share, it's always iOS dominating. So the Google numbers, great, they've been successful. I'm not trying to downplay that, but it's a little fake, some of those numbers, but we won't get into that on this kind of year of review thing, but I'm sure it's a story we'll continue to cover in the new year.
Right. Moving on, in February, Apple announces App Store subscriptions, which is really huge. This allows developers to offer subscriptions within their apps, even publishers of magazines, newspapers, etc. They can use Apple's billing system for subscriptions.
And it was huge news at the time, not only that Apple was now going to allow that, but there was a lot of controversy about their restrictions. And I remember talking about it at length, and we both kind of agreed that Apple wasn't dumb, that this stuff would get sorted out. And now looking back again in retrospect, it was a whole bunch of hype for no reason. Nobody really pulled out. They worked out partnerships with the big names like the Spotify's and the Netflix and the Kindles of the world. So, as usual, Apple can be stringent in certain areas, but they're no dummies. They're trying to make a platform that works not only for the customers, but for their partners. And all that controversy was for nothing. Now it's just seems like something that's always been there, and lots of people are taking advantage of it. And the companies who have implemented it, every week you kind of hear of a new one showing subscriptions being up 300 or 400% since going to iOS. So as I predicted at the time, and I'll continue to predict, the few holdouts, the few people who are going to other app stores or going to HTML5 browser versions, eventually they'll all be back at the Apple app store. It's just too big a market with those credit cards and everything else. It's just so easy for the customer. If you're serious about selling a subscription, you have to be in the Apple app store.
Oh, totally. It's kind of goes with the saying, if you want to, you got to pay to play. If you want to be a part of this ecosystem with hundreds of millions of devices, you're going to have to pay straight up. Next up here in February, late February, Steve Jobs met President Obama. There was a dinner that was held on down in Silicon Valley, along with other prominent business leaders there. Mark Zuckerberg, there's a famous photo where it shows a frail Steve Jobs sitting to the left of President Obama. On the other side of Obama was none other than Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, or known as the Zuckmeister.
Yeah, that was another story that was huge news. I'm a little disappointed that we've learned so little about it. It's one of those events that you almost wish somehow somebody would have bootlegged, or the White House would release official video down the road or something. But a big thing. And I guess if you're the president and you're dealing with a struggling economy, I guess that was there's nobody better to have sitting right beside you than Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg when it comes to two guys who have figured out how to make money.
Yeah. In the Steve Jobs biography, it does reveal a little bit about how that dinner came about. It talks about how I think originally Steve didn't want to go to the dinner. He said he didn't want to go, but eventually he agreed to go. I think his wife told the president, basically Steve didn't want to go, but his wife convinced them. I'm not going to really spoil it, but it's in the biography. Lots of interesting stuff is in this book. It's great. I thought it was a fantastic read.
Yeah, I'm not all the way through it yet, but we'll try not to. I find it kind of funny that everybody, if you listen to other podcasts or read other blogs, people will spoil certain parts about the book and then say, oh no, I better hold this back. It's kind of hard to spoil a book like that because there's so much out there. But if you're listening to this podcast, it's a book you must read. And like I said, I'm about halfway through it right now, so we'll try not to spoil too much about it. I hadn't got to that part yet, but overall,
whoops.
No, I knew that was coming. I've heard reporting on it too. And I don't think you can really spoil it. There was areas that people reported on, and then I read that part of the book, and the book was much more detailed. So it's not an issue.
Yeah, what I found crazy was that every time I hear about news and other events, I keep on all of the events that happened or the stories that I read about in the biography keeps on coming back into my head. So it's actually makes everything so much more interesting.
Yeah.
Moving on to March, here, significant, Apple announces the iPad 2. Steve Jobs on stage himself.
Yeah, that was a very significant announcement. There was, first of all, the fact that, if you remember, even up until a few weeks before the announcement, the rumor mill just had it that the iPad was going to be delayed to the fall. People were reporting on it almost as if it was fact. And then sure, Apple just comes out and says, oh no, here it is. We're going to announce it next week. And then the next speculation was, oh, will we see Steve Jobs? And I remember most of the rumors were that he wasn't going to be the presenter, or he might just be there but not presenting. And then sure enough, Steve went on stage and worked his magic as usual. The crowd went crazy, and he mentioned that it was just too important of an introduction for him to miss. And you just know, not only from the book, from everything we've learned up to now, the iPad meant a lot to Steve Jobs. I think, and I'm not the first person to say it, it seems like it was sort of the computer that he had always wanted to make, what he even originally envisioned when he started Apple, that this was the type of product he wanted. So yeah, I remember it being very exciting to see Steve present that in March of last year.
Yeah, and a week later, we finally got the release of iOS 4.3, which brought AirPlay for third-party apps, personal hotspot, and iTunes home sharing.
All great features too. I use the personal hotspot all the time. I have an iPad 2 that I didn't get the 3G model because of that hotspot sharing. It works great. We got lucky here with Rogers that they don't charge extra for it. And even the iTunes sharing now, a lot of times I don't even bother loading music on my iPad if I'm in another room or before I go to bed or whatever. I just have music and video streaming from my computer to the iPad. So that 4.3 was a pretty significant release.
Yeah, AirPlay is phenomenal. I use it with my iPad 2, specifically with Air Video, for any sort of movies or TV shows that I have on my computer. I launch them on Air Video on the iPad, and I AirPlay them right to our Apple TV here. And I can watch it on the big screen. No more transferring files to USB sticks and all that stuff. Now it's just so seamless, and a few taps and I'm in.
Yeah, and it seems like everybody's starting to support it now. So that, I think we predicted that at the time, that AirPlay was going to be a game changer. And if you use Apple products, it's fantastic.
Moving on to April, this was quite interesting. LocationGate, quote unquote. On April 20th, news broke that iOS backups contained a cache of location data. On the 27th, a week later, Apple responded to the issue, and Steve Jobs did an interview with All Things Digital to clarify the situation.
It's really interesting to look back at all these stories, how your perception changes so dramatically just a few months later. At the time, this was huge news. You even had some mainstream media coverage. People were painting Apple to be some type of evil big brother that was trying to track all this info. Apple came out and said, basically, that's not why we're collecting it, and we didn't mean to be caching so much, and we'll issue a fix. And now, again, when I was putting the list together, I had to actually go back and see that. I had almost forgotten about it. It was another one of those things that seemed like such an important issue at the time, and now looking back, turned out to be a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, I know Steve, a couple days before, he did send out an email to a reader basically saying, we don't track anyone. The info circulating around is false. And basically, one of the email that someone sent him referenced an Android. Steve was saying, we don't track anyone. But it was revealed in that All Things Digital interview that Apple was going to use this data to help eventually come out with some sort of traffic software or some sort of navigation type software, which we haven't seen yet, but they did mention it back at the time.
And these things are going to continue to be an issue because we're so connected digitally now to everything. And I think it's just going to have to be moving forward that companies have to be really transparent about what they're doing and explain why they're doing it. And then the individual person is just going to have to decide who they're comfortable with. For me personally, I share everything with Apple. Every time I get a dialog box that says, do you give us permission to send back information to make it a better experience? I always say yes. Now, when it's Google or Facebook or some other companies, I'm not always so quick to do that. So everybody just has to kind of make up their own mind. But I'm very comfortable with Apple, not only because I kind of trust them after years of thinking they've been pretty good actors, but sometimes you have to look at people's motivations, and Apple makes their money by selling us great hardware and software. They don't make money by selling us advertising and selling our information. So I think when you look at where a company makes their money, that says a lot about their motivation. Whereas a company like Google and Facebook, our information is a big part of their profit model. So you always have to be a little skeptical about how they're going to use that.
Totally. Moving on April 27th, Apple confirmed that the white iPhone 4 would be available the next day on the 28th. It would be available from AT&T and Verizon, also in Canada as well. Who would have thought that just, you know, a new color for an iPhone would cause so many people to stay up at night and not be able to go to bed?
Well, yeah, the white iPhone was almost as big a deal as the Verizon. They announced it when they originally announced the iPhone 4. Then it was delayed. Then they said the new year. And right when it looked like there was just no way it was going to happen, I remember, again, the rumors were starting to be that it wasn't going to happen. It was weird. Right before, if you remember, before they finally released it, Apple actually removed several references from the website. So people started to assume that, hey, this thing isn't coming out. And then I remember Steve Wozniak was quoted in a bunch of articles saying that, no, it was definitely coming out. And then sure enough, it did come out. And surprisingly, a lot of people went out and bought them. They sold a lot of them. It was sold out on the website. I know people personally who either waited for the white or then went and got the white and sold their black one. So even though it was the exact same phone, you wouldn't think color was that big a deal, but it was for a decent amount of people.
Yeah, everyone loves to you know, have their own individual style, and having a white iPhone let people know that, hey, you had a white iPhone.
Well, I can tell you one thing that I'll bring it up because we never discussed it. I had the black iPhone 3G, and then I had the white 3GS because I felt like, just for a change, and then I had the black iPhone 4, and when it came time to buy the 4S, I actually bought the white again, just basically for the rotating effect, to try something new. And now for the first time, I can say there's actually a practical benefit to the white, that it does not show the smudges and the fingerprints near as much. So I love the black one. It is so sleek and beautiful looking, but I'm also anal about how it looks. So when I had a black iPhone 4, I was literally carrying this microfiber cloth in my pocket and wiping it down like 30 times a day. And that's one actual practical benefit of the white. You don't see the fingerprints the same way. So I'm a big fan of the iPhone 4S in white.
Yeah, I basically have all black models for the 3G, 3GS, iPhone 4, 4S, and the original is still kicking around too there somewhere. But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that Apple has only stuck to two colors. A lot of people had predicted, including myself, that, you know, maybe Apple would venture into, you know, their iPod model where they had, you know, so many different colors for the Nano. But I guess when it comes to the production of a phone, I mean, you don't want to waste, you don't want to have stock just sitting on a shelf because of its color that's not selling.
So, yeah, I think that's partly a production issue. And I think they tried to answer that a little bit with the bumper cases to give it a little personality. I also think there's a difference between a $99 or $129 iPod and like a $500 or $600 device. I think Apple wants that to be really elegant. And that's why I don't buy any of these rumors of all these weird redesigns. I think Apple's quite content to let Google, HTC, Samsung have all these goofy looking phones, and they still want to just be the classic elegant Apple look. So I don't expect to see a pink iPhone anytime soon, but I could be wrong.
Moving on, here in May, we had this company, Lodsys, a patent troll. They ended up suing a whole bunch of other companies, and eventually they also sued several iOS app developers as well. Basically, there were some patents in question, and this started into a huge debate. Lodsys had previously also sued printer companies such as HP, Canon, Brother, and Samsung.
Yeah, and I don't think we know anything yet. Those things are still ongoing. Apple jumped in, but so hopefully those lawsuits will all be thrown out and we can never hear about Lodsys again. But unfortunately, I don't think that story is quite over yet.
Yeah, it's definitely ongoing. Now, on to June. Steve Jobs, here he is on stage at the WWDC keynote. He delivered the keynote. Apple announced iOS 5, OS 10 Lion, and iCloud. For the first time, no hardware was announced. Steve did go on stage to introduce iTunes Match, which is currently only available in the USA, but has been stated by Apple that it will be coming to other countries within the next year or so. But it was great to see Steve on stage there.
That's a very, again, in retrospect, a very significant date in Apple history. From a technical standpoint, obviously Lion is a huge move towards kind of making iOS and OS X work closer together. I think we've only seen the very beginnings of what Apple's going to be doing with iCloud. And of course, that was Steve's last keynote, and it was again a surprise to see him. I remember being moved a little bit at the time and feeling it was a little bit of a different Steve, but now if you go back to that video now, he walks out, his voice isn't as strong as it normally is, and I'm not even meaning health-wise. You can tell it's an emotional event. I haven't got to any parts of that in the book, but I wouldn't be surprised if Steve knew that there was at least a chance that would be his last public appearance. He says at the beginning something along the lines of, "Thank you very much, it always helps," with again a little bit of a crack in his voice, which isn't the Steve we had seen to that point. He was always a pretty keeping the emotional side and that personal part private. It was always about the products. And I remember at the time, Marco Arment, who is a blogger and the creator of Instapaper, when Steve hit the stage, he said, "Oh, he doesn't look good and he doesn't sound good." And then later in the keynote, when he came back, he seemed to be in better shape magically, almost that Steve reality distortion field. He was excited about the product. The emotion of the moment had sort of passed. And despite what his condition was, it was just Steve at his best. It's amazing what he was able to do. So I think that'll be a significant keynote. I think Apple fans and historians will look back at that video for a long time as being a pretty important date for Apple.
Yeah, I mean, and that was also one of the keynotes where Steve played a major part in it, but it was also an opportunity for other members of the executive team to go over the large parts about iCloud, talking about iOS 5, and it almost was almost like a trial run. It went really well. So, you know, Steve has done his job of grooming his executive team to, you know, to pass on the torch and to keep on going, even if he's not there, and he's not going to be the one that's solely on stage all the time.
Yeah, and you saw a little bit of that leading up to that. There was other keynotes that he took a lesser role on. So you're right. I think that was a grooming process. And the thing, if you look at Apple, all those different guys, Scott Forstall, Eddie Q, Johnny Ive, even sometimes in the videos, they're all really good. They're no Steve, but you could almost take the fourth or fifth best guy at Apple, and he's better than Eric Schmidt or Jeff Bezos from Amazon or Mark Zuckerberg. Like, that must be an important part of Apple's strategy. That's, they almost must pick these people part of that because they're all very good on stage.
Well, I completely agree. I can only think back to the most recent Facebook event where Mark Zuckerberg tried to do his best Steve Jobs impersonation, and it was just painful to watch.
Yeah.
Moving on. The next day, this was a real treat here. Steve Jobs himself shows up at a meeting of the Cupertino City Council to present his plans for a new Apple campus that will basically consist of the old lot that HP used to own in Cupertino, and unveiled this incredible design for a campus that looked like a spaceship, just huge circle. And yeah, I mean, I can only imagine the shock of having Steve Jobs show up himself to a council meeting to propose a new campus.
Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't seen that video, track it down, because not only is what Steve says interesting and the campus is beautiful and their plans are incredible, but it's actually just comical to watch these council people just fall all over themselves like they're in the presence of royalty or whatever it is. They're just, you can tell they're so excited that Steve's there. They're nervous. They're trying to kind of joke with them and do different things. And Steve, just typical Steve, rolled with the punches, came up with clever line after clever line with the responses. And it was just, no matter what was going on with Steve's health or physical appearance, he was just classic Steve all the time. It's another good video to go watch if you somehow missed it.
Oh yeah, the mayor himself on that day, he even showed his own iPad to Steve, which was pretty funny. Basically, Apple recently also posted up some higher resolution images of the campus. And basically, it's going to look like this huge huge circular building that's just surrounded by lush trees and just be... it'd be an amazing place to work at.
Definitely. And I think it'll be a place once it opens that Apple fans will flock to just to kind of see it.
Yeah. We're into July now. And in July, this is when Apple, they finally released OS X Lion. And what made it different this time was that it was exclusively available from the Mac App Store.
For a great price, and it went surprisingly well for that. They announced a few days after that they had, I think, sold 1 million copies that first day. And I remember it just being like a seamless process. So again, I don't think people fully appreciate the full effect of Lion yet. This is an ambitious operating system, the Mac App Store, the gestures, the closer integration with iOS. This is a company that firmly has a strong sense of where they're going in the future. And I know me, we're not going to go into detail on a year in review, but I could go on for 3 hours about everything I love about Lion, just down to the smallest details. You feel like almost we'll look back at, you used a computer up until Lion and you got used to doing something one way, and then now it's a new way. And the transition was just seamless. Within days, I was just used to full screen apps and swiping between screens, and it just makes using a computer so much easier and quicker. And I know some other people, family members who are less technical, took them a little while longer to wrap their head around Lion, but as they get used to it as well, it's incredible. So I can only imagine younger people who just grow up using a computer like this, if they ever go back and have to use a mouse or see some of the old ways we did things with Windows and everything, they'll wonder how the heck we ever survived.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lion is introduced. It's a huge next step, and it's available for $30, which is ridiculous. But that's funny how you mentioned that. I mean, the children of today, they're lucky enough to use other better improved operating systems, whereas, you know, when we were growing up, we're dealing with Windows 3.1, 95, XP, and all those blue screens and all that crap. And now, you know, kids don't know anything other than iPhones and iPod touches. It's a great time to be alive.
Yeah.
Moving on here. Back in August, we're jumping to August now. On the 24th of August, Steve Jobs stepped down as CEO. He announced his resignation as CEO, and he became the chairman of the board. Tim Cook was appointed CEO.
Again, another one of those things that at the time, and even looking back, was shocking. It shouldn't have been. He was on a medical leave, but just reading the headline, Steve Jobs resigns as CEO, I remember John Gruber saying it was a shock to his nervous system, and I still haven't found a better description of that, even though it should have been obvious. It was shocking. Apple and Steve, Apple and the iPhone, all these things, you just can't imagine one without the other. And no matter what you might have feared the worst when it came to anything health related, you always knew somehow that Steve was going to not have to get to that point. So I remember at the time at the podcast, just because it's my own human nature and partly out of respect, tried to put a completely positive spin on it. But you just knew deep down, Steve no longer being CEO wasn't a great sign. And again, a bad day in Apple history, but one I think we'll remember. And typical Steve, beautiful worded email and kind of wrapped up an entire lifetime at Apple in a beautiful couple paragraphs. And they did exactly what he asked. Tim Cook quickly became CEO. And I don't know. I don't know what else I can say there. It was just, again, something that shouldn't have been shocking, but was.
Yeah, it's most of the time these announcements, they just come out of the blue. And you know, that shock coupled with the actual announcement itself totally gets, you know, people caught off guard. And, you know, in this email, you know, he did say that if there ever was a day that, you know, he could no longer meet his duties and expectations as CEO, he'd be the first to let the board know. And he says, unfortunately, that day has come. You know, with the simplicity of Steve and the way that he can announce things, boom, shocks the world. So that was huge. His announcement was also included in parts of the biography as well. So, yeah, if you want to find out more about it, check out that bio. Moving on to September, leading up to this time, we heard nothing but some of the most insane iPhone 5 rumors. People were convinced, myself included, that, you know, Apple was going to announce a completely redesigned iPhone. Eventually, you know, people concluded that, you know what, there is going to be no redesign. It's going to be the same iPhone. In September, on the 27th, Apple finally announces their Let's Talk iPhone event that would take place on the October 4th. So that ended all the speculation that, you know what, this teardrop design, these insane rumors, they're going to come to an end. We're just going to have to wait a week, less than a week, and find out what is going to be announced.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect part to mention what you were saying about the rumors. As I was putting the show notes together for this recap, the thing that struck me was I could find all these important stories that were really important, but if you go to any Apple blog, pick any month, and if they did 100 stories or 10 stories, 50% of them were Apple rumors, and I didn't even know kind of where to slip those in, because if we discussed rumors, we'd be here for a month. But the rumors were all year round. The rumors rotated between a brand new radical design to no, just a tweak. And even this was the first year that they didn't announce a phone at WWDC, which had been rumored for a while. So, and then even right before Apple announced this event, you were starting to pick up steam of that they could have gone even further, that you might not see the new phone till the new year. So it should have been kind of the worst kept secret, but even that, again, Apple keeps you on your toes, and they finally, at the end of September, long after most people thought, we finally got word that there would be a new iPhone.
Yeah, so it was pretty crazy here. And then back to October here, Tim Cook, he is on stage, and it's his job this time. He announces the iPhone 4S. It's the same design. However, there's a new feature, Siri, the new voice assistant, alongside the A5 chip that debuted in the iPad 2, iOS 5, a better camera, basically just a faster phone with Siri and a better camera. And there it is, right? Available to the world.
Yeah, and it was, again, a significant day because it was finally announced, even though the iPhone 4 continued to sell well, everybody was sort of wondering what's taking Apple so long. Of course, it was the first keynote that Steve wasn't present at. Tim Cook did an admirable job. There wasn't the same energy in the room. Maybe it's coincidence. Maybe looking back, we now know why, but and if you also remember, the reaction was pretty negative that day. And we had seen that in the past with the iPad 2, and we'll get to the story in a few seconds about the actual launch. But the initial reaction was actually pretty negative. I think you and I on the podcast were pretty positive about it. But I think even at the time I said, it looks like a good phone, but it's not something I'm necessarily going to rush out and get. If Rogers doesn't have a great deal, I might just skip it this year. A lot of people had that attitude, and it didn't exactly turn out that way. But with, as happened in the past with Apple, sometimes the reality distortion field doesn't work. People are less than thrilled with the announcement, but it usually turns around once the product comes out.
Yeah, I mean, after the phone came out, it became evident about Apple's phone cycle and how from this point forward, if they do stick to the same naming scheme and the way that the models are presented, it's going to go from a major, it's going to, you know, let's say we're going from the 3G to the 3GS, not that big of a change. Moving on to the 4, that was a huge change. Now the 4S, cosmetically it stayed the same, but it was the software and the hardware that made the big change. So, I think John Gruber had written about people upgrading with their smartphones. I mean, you have to be a crazy person or a crazy Apple fan like myself, like Justin, to update your iPhone once every single year. I mean, the average person is tied to at least, a 2 or 3 year contract to have a subsidized iPhone. So it wouldn't make sense to come out with a brand new device every single year, as much as we would like it. I mean, even though I'm using the iPhone 4S right now, it's great. It's fantastic. But I still could be using my iPhone 4 at the time. I've said this all this time that the iPhone 4 is still an amazing phone. It's not going anywhere. But the iPhone 4S is just that, few notches better.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I absolutely love the iPhone 4S. It's by far the best phone on the market. But my advice to other people, and I get asked a lot, both people who listen or know me from the podcast and just tweet me or email me, and family and friends and people, I always say, if you're going to start a new contract, don't buy a $99 iPhone 4. Spend the $59 or $100 more and get the iPhone 4S. But if you already have the iPhone 4, and unless you're nuts, as Gary pointed out, like us, or you can work it out some way to sell your old one and manage the cost, it isn't this radical leap forward from that standpoint. If the iPhone 4S suddenly disappeared tomorrow, I would go back to the iPhone 4 willingly. It's a fantastic phone. And I think that also ties into what you were saying about the pattern. I think Apple does look to have a little pattern, but you can't say it's really a pattern after only two cycles. What I think, and I think was probably what Steve wanted to see, and I hope Apple doesn't get caught up without his day-to-day leadership that way now, they lose sight of this, is I think Apple's content to let Android, the Samsungs, HTCs of the world, sell you gimmicks. This size screen, this shape, all these weird hardware things. And I think Apple would love to just have the iPhone become like a MacBook Pro, where it's like, here is our beautiful, elegant design, and we update it when we find something better. We're not going to update it every year just to be some gimmick. If you remember leading up to the iPhone 4S announcement, there was even these rumors that it was going to be internally very similar to the iPhone 4, but there was going to be some physical differences because people who upgrade want to have a different look. Even Samsung has a commercial out right now that jokes where this Apple fan saying, well, how will people know if I upgrade if it doesn't look any different? Well, Apple released a phone that you cannot tell physically is any different. Apple, I don't think, gets caught up with those gimmicks. They take a design that they feel is the best at the moment. I'm sure they're working on 5 or 10 different designs moving forward. And when those designs they feel are up to snuff and they can get the materials and everything else at the right time and the right price, then you'll see an upgrade. So I could see the release schedule being different for years to come, where you might see a certain design last 2 or 3 cycles if there's not something better to have. I don't see Apple going into the gimmicky every 3 months, some radical design change.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's now at the point where smartphones have gone beyond the hardware race. Software is huge. I mean, if you're a type of person that wants to have that, amazing looking phone and you really need to get something different, Android is for you, because they have so many new models coming out like literally every 2 weeks. Each one is better than the other. But the pitfall is only those newest devices get access to the latest version of the Android software. Whereas with the iPhone 4S and the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 3GS, these three flagship products here, they all have access to iOS 5. And it comes down to the developers again. I've said this all the time, people make the most amazing apps for iOS versus Android. Yes, they might make them for Android, but it's just a different experience because you have so many different phones with so many different resolutions on their screens, different types of hardware, and it's just not the same. I mean, so it would be almost impossible for a developer to perfect their apps for Android versus iOS, when you could easily have an iPhone 4 and an iPhone 3GS with you, and you could ensure that the apps run fine.
Well, that's why the iPhone is so dominant, because if they only had one or the other, it would still be the Apple fan. Like, there's been people who've been using Apple for decades, and there was a time where you made certain sacrifices to use an Apple product. You almost certainly paid more money for an Apple product. Now Apple has pulled the greatest trick of all time, where they've not only continued to have the best stuff, but basically competitive price-wise now. And when you have hundreds of millions of these iOS devices out there, you're no longer just selling to the people who appreciate Apple. It's a mainstream product. And like you said, the mainstream aspect of it still comes from how great that software is. I'm sure there's the odd person who almost is attracted to an Android phone for some other reason, but the people, the traditional Apple fan, that person who really cares about a really well-built, elegant product, it'll take a miracle for me to switch to Android just for that reason. Even if they somehow could get caught up software, I don't want these plasticky phones. When I went to get my 4S, it was really interesting this year. I lined up as usual, even though I said I might not. It's, as you said earlier perfectly, you called us nuts or whatever it was. I had to go there that day. And last year, the lineup for the iPhone 4 was all Apple fanatics. And this year, there was just as many people lined up. But this year, people were just all around talking. And there was a whole bunch of BlackBerry people who were just saying, it was right after that BlackBerry outage. I'm sick of BlackBerry. I'm fed up now. I'm switching. And there was also a significant portion of people there who had Android phones that were getting rid of them because of the cheap hardware. I remember one girl in particular brought me the phone. She's like, I actually really like the phone, but I've only had it 2 months and the battery pack's falling off and this part's broken. They're just these cheap plasticky phones and they're not going to hold up. Like, we use an iPhone 4 for a year and then I sell them and they look like the day I had it. The person who buys it's kind of amazed at what it looks like. And I just don't see other hardware manufacturers putting that kind of effort into their hardware. So as long as Apple keeps having such strong hardware and software, they're going to be the phone to beat for a long time.
Yeah, I just love being able to, I love that an iPhone 3GS user has access to iOS 5, whereas you have some of the older phones. I mean, the 3GS is what, 2 years old now, and it still has access to the most up-to-date version of iOS. Take a look at any Android phone that's 2 years old. Would they ever have access to, you know, the latest version of Android 4.0 coming out? No, they don't. It's just not possible. That's a fraction. That's Android right there. It's a calculated mess.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next story. The day after that, the iPhone 4S is announced, Steve Jobs passes away. He loses his longtime battle with cancer. This was the next day. I believe it was Friday. And I first saw this when I was online at the time on my MacBook here. And I saw this tweet from the Associated Press that said Steve Jobs had passed away. But prior to that, it was just another interesting fact of how Twitter can just really get you information so quickly. My timeline it started off with a whole bunch of, you know, people swearing, people making sad faces, making comments such as, oh no. And here I am wondering what's going on. And then boom, it hits me. Steve Jobs has passed away.
I think at this point, I mean, it's unbelievable too that he passed away a day after that phone was announced. That's kind of crazy timing. And I'll just say at this part of the podcast, Gary and I are going to record an entire episode about Steve, a tribute to Steve, sort of our feelings about the day. So I'm not going to get into my reaction or anything now. So if you're listening to this, don't think we're glossing over this at all. We're just going, it might come out before this or after this. I don't know the scheduling yet, but look in the feed, look on the website. There will be a Steve Jobs episode where we'll go into more detail. The one thing I think is appropriate to say in this context is, sad day for Apple, but look at everything we've discussed up until this point, going through the year chronologically. The man, months before he died, is still at the top of his game, at the top of his company, being so involved. And I was purposely trying to gloss over this story as much as possible because I wanted to discuss each of those elements the way they happened. And looking back, it's the decade, it's the century of Steve Jobs, but it really is the year of Steve Jobs that even though he's this sick, his fingerprints are over every aspect of this year Apple-wise. So that's where I want to point out now. Like I said, we'll do a whole episode on our reactions and tributes that way. But just every story we've reported on was Steve was involved in significantly. And I think that's kind of amazing. Learning what we did on this day of how sick he really was, he was still doing all this amazing stuff right up till he died.
Yeah, and on that day, the Apple website, the homepage was taken over just with a graphic, Steve Jobs, you know, with 1955 to 2011, and a short little blurb about Steve. So like Justin said, we'll talk more about this in our other episode about Steve. On October 14th, the iPhone 4S finally released. Canada was part of the launch this time for the 4S, which we weren't for the iPhone 4. Over the first weekend, over 4 million were sold. This time around, a lot of people pre-ordered online. Some people ended up getting theirs in the first day. Some people waited in line. Still, even though people were disappointed with the announcement of the iPhone 4S, this phone sold like hotcakes.
Exactly what happened with the iPad 2. The initial reaction was a little negative, but when people got their hands on this product, they wanted it. And the one thing we haven't discussed yet, and again, this is the perfect time in the chronologically to look at it, is October 14th was all about Siri. This was a feature that people thought might be like a FaceTime thing where it's a cooler demo than it is in practice. And then people started to use it and were literally blown away how well it worked. Then you got into the Siri comedy routines because you still see things, all this crazy stuff. I'm stumbling over my words because I'm trying to avoid saying she, talking about Siri like she's a human being, but that's what Apple's done. You refer to her as she. I have found myself saying thank you to Siri. It's ridiculous that they could come up with this voice technology that not only works so well, it blows your mind how well it gets your voice. If you use the dictation, it's almost flawless. Certain times I stop my dictation because I know I stumbled over the word. I didn't pronounce it correctly, but she, there we go. I say it again. But Apple somehow not only released a voice product that works really well, but has all this personality in it. It's really kind of amazing. And obviously 2011 will always be remembered from on the broader scheme of being Steve's final year with Apple. But I think Siri is the beginning of something big here and where the technology is going. And I think this was one time that Apple's demo at the keynote actually didn't do it justice. People thought it was kind of cool in the keynote, but were kind of blown away by it when they got it in their hands.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to call Siri she in Canada and in the U.S., for U.S. English at the time, because Siri does speak, Siri is a female. Whereas if you go to the UK, Siri there is a man. It was revealed that the fellow who did the voiceovers for Siri in the UK, he didn't even know about it. He is working a contract. He did some contract work for, I think, one of the companies that Nuance ended up purchasing to develop the technology behind Siri, and he found out that he was part of Siri when he saw a commercial for the, I think it was an interview, and there's a demo of the iPhone 4S, and he heard his own voice, which I find hilarious. So yeah, I mean, Siri is amazing. It really depends on who you talk to, and for those people who realize how powerful it can be. Just for the little things, driving, you know, we're not supposed to be texting, not supposed to be checking our phones. Siri can let you do the things that you previously would not be able to do before. Quickly send a text message to your wife, or quickly jot down a memo right in the car without even pressing any buttons. It's amazing. I think it's great. Obviously, you know, we've been using it for a while now, but even though Siri is, you know, still in beta and it is crippled in Canada with lack of location support and restaurant searches and all that stuff, I still love it, you know, for being able to, you know, reply to text messages in the car, hands-free.
I think that's why Siri is such a phenomenon, because not only is it work really well from a practical standpoint, and we're only seeing the very beginning of it, as you mentioned, it's not even rolled out worldwide. It's severely Limited in Canada. It doesn't have any kind of API, almost no third-party support. But what it does so well. So people are fascinated by it. And again, the fact that Apple was able to build so much personality into this thing that I think half the reason Apple's servers were so overwhelmed was they knew everybody was going to start dictating their text with it. I don't think they expected people to be proposing to Siri and asking Siri what's the best phone and all these joke things. So, I mean, I'll admit the first few days of having the iPhone 4S, Siri was almost more a game than it was a practical application. You just found yourself asking it and saying all kinds of weird things to it just to see what it would say. And now that that gimmicky side of it is sort of wound down, I still find myself using it all the time. And it's not perfect for everything, but certain things it does really well. Like you said, the being able to text back and forth while driving, or where I use it a lot, is when I'm walking. So I no longer have to take the phone out of my pocket. I hear the beep of a message. I'm walking. I click on it, read messages, hit reply. And it's just so phenomenal to be able to walk or drive and be able to text. And the other reason where I really love it is it's great for setting things like alarms or reminders, where, not that it was difficult before, but to set, say, an alarm, it could be two or three taps and have to use that scroll wheel to set the time. And now you just hold the home button, say, Siri, wake me up at 7. And you don't even have to say, Siri, set my alarm for 7 o'clock tomorrow. You can just use natural language and say, wake me up at 7. And she gives you a prompt saying, I have set your alarm for 7 o'clock. Confirm, and you're good to go. Things like that. It actually becomes quicker to use Siri than anything else. And I love that. And I can only imagine what Siri will be capable of in a couple of years from now.
Yeah. And there's some little things too. Like I love that, you know, if it's nighttime right now and you ask Siri to set an alarm for a time, Siri will automatically make it AM for the next day, as opposed to, you know, PM. So the little things like that. I mean, we could go on and on about Siri. Yeah, exactly. Yes, Siri does have flaws, but at the end of the day, Siri's advantage over others is that you can speak to it in a natural voice, and it understands the various types of ways that you're posing questions or you're making comments to it. It can figure that out. Whereas, as we've seen with demos of Microsoft's Tell Me versus Siri, you know, it's Siri's on another level.
Siri is a classic example of how Apple does things, and you can look at everything they've done and Apple fans always give Apple all the credit. Many Apple fans didn't know voice technology even existed before Siri. So you have Apple people saying, oh, Apple invented this technology, and that's really not the case. But then you have this whole other subset of the population. I've had debates. I've had people curse at me on Twitter. Like, people get flat out angry with you because they'll say, oh, well, Google had this before Apple. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Apple doesn't claim to invent this stuff, but they don't release these half-baked things. They tweak it so it's better. So they're using other people's technology in Siri. They're building on other people's advances, but they have an uncanny ability to look at what's wrong with the technology, and they make it easier to use. And as you mentioned, you look at those demo videos comparing it to other things. Apple did two things nobody else has done before. They've given it a bit of a personality, which makes it easier and more fun to use. And that whole, their ability to use natural language is unbelievable. Nobody wants to sit, and it defeats the purpose and the speed of it if you have to click the button and go, set alarm 7 p.m. Tuesday, like, and you have to just be robotic and try to think of the right commands. If you remember the iPhone before Siri, it did have some voice commands, but you had to be very specific. Call this person iPhone. Like, you had to use these keywords to make sure it got it right. Siri, you can just, the weirdest ways you can come up with saying stuff, she can almost always figure out what you're trying to say and just do it without a lot of hassle. And again, being a brand new product in beta, I can only imagine what this technology will look like in a couple of years.
Yeah, I read an interesting article talking about voice recognition technology and how why Apple released the in beta. Basically, what it comes down to it is that, you know, there's an almost an unlimited amount of voice recordings or voiceovers that, you know, that need to be recorded to make up the database of Siri for her or he to understand what we're saying. So, I mean, the combinations of words and phrases is basically endless. I mean, it's just basically going to come down to how much information, you know, Nuance is able to provide for Siri to be able to understand her commands, right?
Yeah, that's exactly why that article was dead on. Every voice technology needs as big a sample as it can to make it better. And as you mentioned, we could probably talk about Siri all night, but we better move on to the next part of the timeline.
Next story, we're moving on. Steve Jobs, the biography has been released. That's October 24th. Walter Isaacson, he releases his biography of Steve Jobs. It's available in the iBook store, everywhere. It's everywhere. And they did a phenomenal job of marketing the book. I actually finished reading the book, I would say about 3 weeks ago, a combination of reading it on my iPhone and the hardcover edition itself. It was the first time I've read a complete book on my iPhone. What was really cool was being able to take advantage of the bookmark sync between my iPhone and my iPad, just tapping bookmark, you know, on either device and knowing that when I get to either or, it would just magically flip open to my bookmark, which is really cool.
It is a great experience. Technically, I've been reading it on my iPad, but like you, I sometimes you're in somewhere where you can just get a little bit of reading done on the iPhone. The syncing's perfect. I'm only about halfway through the book, and it's partly because I've been busy, but I'm purposely savoring every chapter. I'm reading it slowly and carefully. I reread passages. I'm only halfway through, and I think I've taken 50 notes, and I have it highlighted, which is also great. The highlighting on iBooks is so great, how you can highlight, make notes, those bookmarks and everything, and your notes and your highlighting sync between devices. So again, it's fun to read about a guy who kind of shaped the future in a way on such a futuristic device. And if you listen to this podcast, you have to get the book. The reviews were almost universal praise when it first came out. There's been some negativity lately from more the tech-related press wishing that Walter Isaacson knew a little more about tech, so he would have maybe known more about the tech angles. But I think there'll be no shortage of books about the technical side of Apple. I think he had unprecedented access to Steve Jobs. So for that alone, to get some firsthand accounts of these stories, it's an amazing book. And we'll probably, in the podcast in a few months, we should talk about it again when more people have read it so we don't spoil it. A lot of people are going to be getting it as a gift for the holidays and that. So again, we'll talk about it again in the future, but it's a great book. And if you're an Apple fan or even just an Apple iPhone user, it's probably a must read just to sort of understand a little more about what made Steve Jobs tick and how he was able to accomplish everything he did.
Yeah, it's funny how you mentioned that savoring the book. That's what I did too. But as you get deeper and deeper into the book, it gets juicier and juicier, and you just can't stop turning the pages because you start getting to you know, parts of Steve's life where, you know, you can relate to because you've owned a particular product or you're really curious about how that product was launched. So, I mean, you're either going to read it really, really slowly, or you're just going to blast through it. I remember reading a tweet from Arnold Kim, founder of MacRumors. He actually read his book in one day. So that's crazy.
I honestly thought I was going to read it in one day because I had blown through the first two or three chapters right away. And then like I said, partly a conscious decision because I got busy and I had a lot of stuff to wrap up as the year winds down. And part of me just wanted to savor it, read a chapter, sort of think on it, take some notes. But it is a page turner. You're right. It's something you might read in a night or two because it is that compelling.
All right, moving on. We're into November now. Steve Jobs, he's been nominated for the Time Person of the Year. He had full support of NBC's Brian Williams. Steve Jobs, Time Person of the Year. I mean, sure, you know, our opinion might be a little skewed, but hands down, I think, you know, Steve should take it. I mean, people don't realize how much of an impact Steve has in our lives. I mean, nowadays, I mean, every single person has an iPhone, and or they have some sort of iOS device, or they have a Mac, and it's incredible how much this has impacted our lives. I mean, people are able to go anywhere they want, and they, you know, they have their iPhone with them, and it's so easy to use. You have instant access to your email, everything, and we really take it for granted about, you know, how much time we spend looking at these small little screens. I mean, one example, Alec Baldwin getting kicked off his American Airlines flight for playing Words with Friends. Now, the funny thing is, you know, I actually saw the opening of his appearance on Conan O'Brien, and the moment he stepped out, the first thing he grabbed out of his pocket was his iPhone 4 or 4S. And he proceeded to take an image of Conan himself and Andy. And then he, for the first minute, he didn't even look at either one of them. He was telling them he was live tweeting that picture out to the web. And it was later on in the day, I think he got kicked off that flight and then deactivated his Twitter account.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Again, I'm going to resist the temptation to go on too much right now about Steve being Person of the Year, because as I mentioned, we'll cover that in our tribute episode, but it's a no-brainer. I mean, they better pick him as Person of the Year. He's the person of the decade. He's the person of the century. On one hand, you're right that maybe we're a little biased, but to be honest, I have a sneaking suspicion. And the great thing about history is it's not told till much, much later. But I have a feeling that even the most nutcase Apple fan, the most crazy Steve Jobs fan, as we basically are, you try to be subjective, and I mean, in some ways, I guess we're supposed to be impartial trying to cover this stuff, but we basically do it because we're interested in the products. I think people are underestimating Steve's impact on the world. I think personally that they might be talking about him 1,000 years from now. Like, you might be, I mean, there's historical figures that are of a certain time, and then there's, you know what I mean, these Jesus or Alexander the Great or these people that transcend that time. I could see Steve being in that type of league. So I'm sure there's people who agree with that and people who think I'm crazy, but I will not be surprised if we are underestimating his impact right now. I like what Bono said in his tribute, just said Steve Jobs basically invented the future. And again, in the small perspective of just these few years of what's happened with computers, you can't underestimate his impact on our lives on a daily basis.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this later. Let's move on here. Yeah. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, they honored Steve Jobs with an exhibit. Basically, 30 massive iPhone-like models showcased the over 300-plus patents that has Steve's name down as either inventor or co-inventor. Really, really neat exhibit. Lots of pictures are on the web. Lastly, this month, December, can't believe we've sort of blasted through a year, Apple has released a statement about Carrier IQ, which is the software that has been installed on various phones by carriers. Tracking your keystrokes, tracking basically everything. No one knew that it was installed. This is a huge story here. Apple publicly announced that they stopped supporting Carrier IQ with iOS 5 and that all data collected was through an opt-in. People can turn off the settings on their iPhones themselves. You can just say no to some diagnostic sending or whatever. It was, it's a carrier prompted thing. You can turn it on and off on your iPhone pretty easily. If you go through the settings, it's not hidden. It's out there. It's transparent. Apple knew about this. Apple has gotten away from Carrier IQ.
Yeah, I put this in the lineup just because, I mean, we're not that far into December yet, so who knows what the big story of December will be. Maybe it hasn't been written yet, but I have a feeling this will kind of be the biggest story of December, and we're just too close to it really to say anything about it. This could end up being a whole bunch of talk about nothing, or it could really be kind of a concerning story. The one area where you got to feel a little concerned about it is I've never seen companies so quick to distance themselves from this. So you kind of wonder when the other shoe drops, some of the data they might have made available to people, because I've never seen ever companies quicker. Like even Rogers in Canada released a statement, and it always kills me that Rogers seems so oblivious. I've never seen a company who is such a big provider of iPhones in a country usually have so little to say about all these different things. And even they jumped on right away and said, oh no, it's not on any of our phones. So it is interesting that people are trying to run away from this Carrier IQ as fast as they can. So I'm sure it's a story we'll discuss again in the new year.
Totally. I think that's about it for our, you know, Apple wrap up for 2011. It's been a crazy year. A lot of interesting news, a lot of ups and a lot of downs, but you know, at the end of the day, we still have these amazing devices that we're using every single day. Once again, everyone, thanks for listening to the iPhone Podcast. Please rate us in iTunes. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada and twitter.com/JustinLouis. Once again, hope everyone has an amazing holiday, and we will talk to you shortly with our special episodes. And in the new year, we plan to be very consistent with our episodes. So make sure you subscribe and stay tuned.
Yep. See you next year, everyone. Thank you.